Our next scripture comes from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6, verses 1 to 9. Love the Lord your God. These are the commandments, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you, to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God. As long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, and so that you may enjoy long life, hear Israel, and be careful to obey, so that it may go well with you, and that you may increase greatly in a land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your own children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames in your houses and on your gates.
Love the Lord your God.
Love the Lord your God. This is the commandment. Our reading from Ezekiel this morning takes us back to last week as we celebrated the baptism of Jesus and we remembered our own. The promise of God to the Hebrew nation is that he will collect all the diaspora in exile from the Babylonian imperial forces and return them to Israel. He will sprinkle them with clean water and cleanse them. Here we see the reference to baptism. He will gather us all, take us home, cleanse us. Here we see God doing a new thing, promising life in the midst of their suffering and despair. God promises something else. God says, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. God gives us a new heart. One that is softened, one that is prepared to receive the Spirit of God, one that will allow us to follow God's commandments in ways of sharing, forgiveness, and loving one another. A new heart. That's what baptism gives us. That's what remembering our baptism gives us. We know hardened hearts or hearts of stone through various stories in the Bible. One prominent reference to hardened hearts is with the Egyptian pharaoh. I'll take you back, right? The Israelites are enslaved in Israel and Moses is called to go free to liberate his people. And he goes to the pharaoh and he says, "Let my people go." And the Bible says over and over again, but the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he was unwilling to let them go. And plague after plague, wonder after wonder, and still the heart of Pharaoh remained hard. When the Pharaoh finally released them from slavery, it is said, "This day shall be a day of remembrance for you." The people endured hard heart, And when they were finally released, God says, remember what you have done. See, the Hebrew nation will know that their liberation was simply the hand of a merciful, loving God setting them free. In the Gospel of Mark, we find the disciples on a boat without food. I love this story. They're sitting in a boat going, we don't got bread. We don't have bread. Oh no, we don't have bread. Right? And they're all worried. Jesus rebukes his disciples, calling out to their hardened hearts. Jesus asks, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? He asked them. Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember? Don't you remember, he says to them, when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many basketfuls of bread did you pick up? 12, they replied. And he says, and when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? And they answered, 7. And he said to them, do you still not understand? Jesus asked this question, and don't you remember? There's a pattern here. Do you see it? There's a connection between hearts of stone, our ability to remember what God has done for us, and hearts of flesh. Therefore, God commands that we do certain traditions, that we do certain things. For the Hebrew nation, they celebrate the Seder meal to remember their liberation from Egypt. Huge. Every year, they remember this. Jesus commands us to baptize. And Jesus commands that we feast at the Lord's Supper, remembering how Jesus has liberated us from sin and death. God is about life, about doing something new. But this work requires soft hearts, ones ready to listen, to see and accept the love of God that is ever present. Remembering is so very important in our faith, because it's the remembering that allows us to carry the steadfast truths of God, who God is, and what God does for us through all time. And so I want to encourage you, it's not just about remembering the stories in the Bible, but remembering about what God has done in your particular life. Finding the ways that you have seen God. Pastor Scott used to always say, where is God in this? There's a reason. You need to cite it and remember it. Our remembering makes visible the invisible. It fosters our faith, and it offers hope and despair when you think nothing else is going to happen. The remembering helps you know that it will. In one of his recent daily meditations, Richard Rohr asked how we live. And I think this is great. He says, all right, do you live as if you're rowing in a rowboat, looking backwards and going forward? Or are you paddling in a canoe, looking forward? Think about how you live your life. Do you only face forward and just keep on trucking? Or do you look back and remember and allow that to inform who you are? In religion, Richard Rohr says, we should row. Moving always forward and informed by what has happened in the past. In Judaism, they study the first 5 books of the Pentateuch every year. They read it in the exact same way, simultaneously, everybody around the world, and they tell it again and again and again, who God is and what God has done for them in the past. See, as they remember, they see what God is doing now, and they trust and remain hopeful in what God will do in the future. This is what shapes their understanding of God and their identity as a nation who loves God with all their hearts, all their souls, and all their strength. I watched a movie the other night, rare occasion, called Coach Carter. Coach Carter was played by Samuel Jackson, and he hesitantly became the basketball coach for Richmond High School, which was his alma mater, and a school faced with severe poverty, crime, and a 50% dropout rate. The coach came in and immediately instituted a contract with the players, the basketball players, with these rules. He said, you have to maintain a GPA of at least 2.3, even though the state only required 2.0. He says, you must attend all classes, you have to sit up front, and you have to wear a coat and a tie on game days. Practices were run with strict discipline and intense physical training. The team becomes undefeated. But in the classroom, the boys are failing. Coach Carter holds the team accountable and locks down the gym, stops all basketball practices and forfeits all games, and calls them all to the library and sits them there and says, we don't play until you get yourself together as academics. See, he's demanding that the players truly be student athletes, and he wanted to put the student first. Everyone in the community is angry with the coach because for them, in this community, they felt like their winning team, their winning basketball team was their hope, and that this probably was going to be the boys' best moment in their lives. Because statistics showed that 1 in 3 would be dead and or in prison in the next 5 years. That only 50% of the students graduated and only like 6 to 9 kids would go to college, right? This would be their highlight. And Coach Carter said, don't you think that's the problem? See, he argues with the community that they've lost focus on what school is all about. They're not remembering. Why had basketball become more important than their education? Coach Carter wants more than just a winning team on the court. He believes the boys deserve the opportunity to attend college and a better life. But somehow, the community, including the school board, the principals, the teachers, and the parents, had forgotten what school and education was all about. I won't tell you the ending of the movie, by the way. You should see it. But what I want you to understand about this is sometimes, as we deal with hardship and suffering, hopelessness and despair, hardened hearts are formed. They lead us into darkness where we need to shine a light of truth. We forget why we're really here. And we need to soften our hearts and return to the remembering. Look backwards and are moving forward and stay steadfast in the truth that we are. Made me wonder about church as I watched this movie. See, it's very difficult to hold on to the very basic principle of who and what we are to be. Mainline churches like Calvary are facing rapid decline, divisiveness, and financial crises. In the midst of our confusion and fears, we often begin to try new things to reshape our identity to fit into the shifting of culture. And there's nothing wrong with that. But do we, in the midst of that, remember why we're here. What's the primary reason that we are here in this church? Have we forgotten what churches have done, are doing, and will do in and through God, who remains steadfast and true in love, kindness, mercy, and justice? Do we remember that it is God who is doing the work through all time? So I sat down in the rowboat and remembered. And I remembered the Shema. The Shema. The Shema is a prayer located in Deuteronomy, in the last five books of the Pentateuch, in which Moses gives a series of speeches to the entire Israelite community before they enter the promised land, before he dies. Moses teaches his people the Ten Commandments all over again. He tells them the story of their liberation. He teaches the Ten Commandments. And he emphasizes what the Jewish tradition counts as a new first commandment. Do you know what that commandment is? Remember what God has done for you. Remember what God has done for you. The commandments are preempted with this statement: I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. Remember who I am. Remember what I have done. Remember. So the Shema is a prayer that is truly the first commandment of the Ten Commandments. Jews pray the Shema twice a day, when they lie down at night and when they get up in the morning. And they cover their eyes with their right hand when they say it. This is a sacred act of remembering. In the Hebrew tradition, the name of God cannot be spoken. It's actually written so that it may not be spoken. It's impossible to say it because God is so sacred and holy, they don't even believe in saying the name. When they write God, they'll put an uppercase G with a dash and a D. They won't even spell it. That's how sacred it is. And it's written as if it is just a breath. See, God is the source of all, and it's our breath that connects us all. Breath, God, spirit, wind. It moves in and through us all. I explain this to illustrate how sacred this prayer is. This first commandment is held in the Jewish tradition. The roots are deep in hallowed ground. So I want you to listen to the Shema. Remember, Jews begin by covering their eyes with their right hand. And it sounds like this. See if you heard it today already. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. Blessed be the name of the glory of his kingdom forever and ever. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. It continues. Moses explains what the people should do to remember it, to never let it be lost through generations, through distractions, through times of despair, oppression, exile, even genocide. How is it that we remember? Moses explains. Keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart. Recite them to your children. Talk about them everywhere. Bind them on your hand, fix them on your forehead, write them on your doorposts. For many Jews, this commandment is taken literally. In Jewish homes, you will find a mezuzah attached to the upper right hand of doorways. It's a small parchment scroll, and on that scroll they have handwritten, it must be handwritten, it cannot be printed or copied, handwritten, the words of the Shema by a scribe. And they put them in little boxes. And the mezuzah scrolls remind those who are living there of their connection of God. And as they go in and out of their doorways, they reach up and they touch the mezuzah. And it's their way of saying the prayer in their hearts. See, the beauty of the Shema is that it goes with you wherever you are, because it's here in your heart. Judaism as a religion tends to be more oriented to holiness of time than holiness of place. They are a people who have been nomadic, who have been exiled, who have been scattered, and yet remain one because they carry the law with them. As I studied about the Shema, I heard the following story from Yaakov Barber. In May 1945, right, when the armistice happened, when the European War ended, two chaplains set out to liberate Jewish people in the death camps in Europe. While they were there in Europe, they were informed that there were children that were being held in a monastery in the south of France, tucked away, hidden. Some of the children had been there since 1939, 6 years they had been in hiding. When the chaplains arrived to collect the children, the priests refused to turn over any children without documentation. They said, "We can't give you children." They could not identify those who were Jewish themselves. And so the rabbis returned that night at bedtime. And as the children were lying down in their beds, they began to walk up and down the aisles. And they began to recite the Shema. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one." What do you think happened? Child after child lifted their hands to cover their eyes. The chaplains exclaimed, "That child is ours. We are taking them home." These young children, some in hiding for over 6 years, remembered. This is the prayer that Jews have cried out for generations. It's a proclamation, a declaration in the belief of one God. But it sheds a deeper light on our very existence in the world around us. See, it says the Lord is our God, that the Lord is one. God is the constant force, a constant energy for the universe to be sustained. So every single thing is an expression of God. God is one. There is nothing that you look upon that is not God. There is nothing besides God. The Lord is one. Imagine a world that truly remembered and lived this truth. Loving God means loving everything. Loving God means loving everything. What would it mean to write this prayer on our hearts, on our heart of flesh. See, if we write it on our hearts, we carry it wherever we are. It is not bound by anything. Like the boys at Richmond High School who were given the gift of education to carry them beyond the basketball courts. And like the children in the monastery hiding secretly from genocide. And like Jesus who came to show us that God lives within us. The Spirit of God descends upon us. So what I'd like to do is warm everybody up. I'd like us to stand up. And I want us to learn the Shema together. Let us stand and we're going to recite it. I'll say it and then you say it back. If you can stand, you can remain seated if you need to. I'm going to do some hand signals for the beginning. You're welcome to join in. You're welcome to create your own. There's all different ways of doing it. But here, let's write this commandment on our heart. You ready? Hear, O Israel. You guys ready? Let's hear you say it. Hear, O Israel. So this is like the people, and there are people of the Bible, right, of the book. The Lord is our God. The Lord, and I like to connect my two fingers together because it's not just one. It's many made into one, right? The Lord is one. All right, let's just try that part again. You ready? Nice and loud. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. Let's do it again. Hear, O Israel. The Lord is our God. The Lord is one. Beautiful, right? It's pretty special. You ready? Let's try it one more time. Hear, O Israel. The Lord is our God. The Lord is one. They have a line in between that says, blessed be the name of the glory of his kingdom forever and ever. But the second part of this that you should remember and carry in your hearts is this. You shall love the Lord your God. Say that with me. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Let's say that again. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Shall we say it one more time? And then we'll sit. You ready? Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Please be seated. Friends, God's grace is ever flowing to liberate us from hard hearts. God's love never fails. God's love never gives up. God is forever seeking and waiting for us. Let us remember that we must first love God above all else. That's who we are as God's people. And he says, keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart. Recite them to your children. Talk about them everywhere. Bind them on your hand. Fix them on your forehead. Write them on your doorposts. Write upon your heart God's commandment. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. Blessed be the name of the glory of his kingdom forever and ever. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might.